you could find brand new worlds right here on Earth, where anything is possible? Same planet, different dimension.
I found the gateway.
The Rewatch Podcast presents The Sliders Rewatch, dedicated to the series Sliders on Fox and Sci-Fi Channel. Join us each week as we continue crossing the Einstein-Rosen-Podolsky Bridge and find ourselves in strange new worlds. Email your thoughts on each episode to the Rewatch Podcast at gmail.com. Join us on Facebook at facebook.com/rewatchpodcast or on Twitter at rewatchpod.
And welcome back to the Rewatch Podcast and our Sliders Rewatch. I'm Corey.
And I'm L. Tom.
All right. Thank you for joining us this week. Of course, we're talking about two more episodes of Sliders. We are in season two. So beginning, the first episode this week is El Cid, written by John Povell, directed by Paris Barclay, originally aired March 29th, 1996.
Your job is to get me home when I want to go. You got that?
Cid, think. He's the only person who can get us home.
Get this? Piss me off and you're stuck here forever.
Don't expect any sympathy. If you'd use your brain, we wouldn't be in this mess. You and your misguided sense of bravado.
Will you stop it? That's not gonna solve anything.
I'm gonna go get some air.
We pick up the episode at the end of another slide in what appears to be a war-torn world, with the sliders trying to find a place to hide until they can slide. Before they can slide, Quinn decides to come to the rescue of a woman who is being pursued by an apparently abusive man. The group then slides with the woman, Michelle, in tow, and her pursuer, Cid, quickly follows them through the vortex. The large group arrives in San Francisco, the entire city of which has been turned into a national maximum security prison due to it being located on a fault line due to give way any day now, which would cause the entire city and anything in it to be destroyed. The prison works on a buddy system with prisoners being paired up with electronic bracelets for tracking purposes. If one buddy makes a mistake or commits a crime or does anything wrong at all, both prisoners are punished by being shot. The group is informed about the do's and don'ts by LJ, a local, quote, guest of the prison with connections. When Quinn's buddy Cid decides to rob an ATM, the group is forced to escape and try to hide lest Quinn be punished as well. LJ leads them underground to supposedly save them, but instead was actually just going to get the timer from them to use for himself and his friends. The exchange is broken up by the prison guards, who have worked out a deal with Cid for the timer as well. The sliders find themselves in jail and faced with a decision to help the guards understand how to use the timer and escape, or stay in jail and die when the quake hits. Arturo decides to help the guards in a ruse designed to get a hold of the timer and get it back to his friends. The ruse almost works, but Michelle saves the day by shooting Cid and sliding with our team to the next world as the quake hits and the prison comes down.
You know, in some ways, this reminds me of Switzerland or Singapore. Clean streets, well-regulated citizenry, stiff penalties in exchange for quality of life.
Yeah, paradise. You like being caned for littering.
Hey, fish!
Over there, man.
My knife slipped. Bring it back here for me.
First of all, my name is not Fish. Secondly, I am not your slave. And thirdly, you should know that though I'm a man of peace, I am prepared to make an exception in your case.
You should be careful with this.
Give me the knife.
We don't want any trouble.
You give me that damn knife or we're gonna hang you upside down and see what shakes out.
Attention, please. I'm with the Neighborhood Watch. As you know, there are rewards for preventing crimes.
And I believe these punks here
are contemplating one.
We've got a possible problem, Sector 9.
Next time, Fish, we'll be looking for you.
All right, so a little bit of trivia on this episode.
All right, so in this episode, originally, when the sliders slid in, they were going to actually slide into the chess game that LJ was playing and mess it all up. They were going to start with a close-up of the chess pieces, and the vortex opens, and boom, they land, you know, right there onto the table and mess up the whole game. Also, Michelle was going to come to Quinn's rescue because Quinn was starting to be strangled by Sid, and Michelle says, no, I wasn't with him. I was with Mike, but all we did was talk. So she actually was with someone originally, but all they did was, you know, talk. Well, yeah, I'm sure they were talking, you know. Anyway, there was a few extra lines about the buddy system, about how it keeps people in check since they know they're going to die soon. It's the only thing that actually works. The whole scene with that guy who throws the knife and says, hey, Fish, you know, bring me back my knife. It was a little bit longer. There was nothing too interesting, though. Just a couple extra lines. Arturo's, you know, he says what he says about the Neighborhood Watch, you know, there's bonuses for reporting crimes. No one actually paid attention to him at all. And the knife thrower comes up and has some more tough guy lines, you know, saying that they're not going to do anything because I'm the big dog around here. So, you know, get used to this. And eventually a custodian comes up and the episode goes on the way it did in the final airing. But, it, you know, just a little bit of extended lines here and there for that. The woman that was in rehab with Wade and Michelle poisoned her neighbor's dog and not her husband. It was originally supposed to be her neighbor's dog. And there was a great scene that I thought would have been nice to have had in there. It was Arturo was going to really get down on Quinn for getting involved, for bringing Michelle along. It wasn't just like, you know, a minor thing. Like, he was really adamant that this was very, very bad. He let it loose. He said, would Sid have actually killed you? You know, he says to Michelle, and she's like, no. And he goes, yeah, see, damn it, boy, it's not your place to tell this woman how to live. We are on a scientific journey. Our job is not to enforce our values on other worlds. It's to observe. How many times do I have to say this? So he was actually very mad about it, you know? Like, I thought that would have been great to have in there. You know, that would have been a neat thing to sing. And his delivery and everything, you know, damn it, boy, you know, it's not your place. you know, I thought that would have been awesome to have heard him. And that would have, you know, developed the relationship, you know, a little bit differently than what we've had so far. Also, in this episode, Remy was going to be used, there was a note about this, Remy was going to be used a little bit more like he was in season one as comic relief. He was going to be a lot more goofy and, you know, hysterical, I guess, and like many more jokes, but they toned it down, which is good because I like where they're going with Remy. Arturo, when he sells out the group at the end there, when you don't know, like, oh, is he actually going to do this? There was mention of him being jealous of Quinn, just like the psychic said he was back in Into the Mystic. Mm. So it sort of called back to that. He's also a lot more evil in the original script. When he was leaving, you know, to go and give the guards what they need, he says something like, you know, I'm going home to perfect sliding, and when I do, I'll have every right to call it my own, you know, and he walks out. It's like, wow. Because you didn't know at that point. You knew that the psychic said, yeah, you know, he might be a little jealous of you, you know, he resents you. And right here, this would have been the thing like, oh my God, he really does. So it was a nice little scene to have in there originally. And then, of course, the end, the very end of the episode wouldn't have ended with the earthquake that, as we saw. It would have ended on the new world that the sliders landed in with Michelle, and they would have been on a runway, airplane runway with a plane ready to land right down on top of them. That's how it originally was going to close.
And maybe yeah. They could kill off Michelle or something.
There you go. That would explain everything.
Because as it stands, no explanation.
Exactly.
You sought us out.
Professor, you can't be serious.
Oh, grow up, Miss Wells. As the man says, survival of the fittest. Better that one of us should survive than all of us perish.
You can't mean this. What are you gonna do, Professor? Steal the idea? Wait till I'm out of the way so you can call sliding your own?
No, Mr. Mallory, I am going to go home and perfect it. which is what you should have done before you imperiled all our lives. When I've done that, I will have every right to call sliding my own.
We'll die here.
I'm truly sorry.
I'll get you for this. I swear I will, you bastard! This isn't over! You hear me?
All right, so getting into our discussion of this episode.
The one thing I noticed, and at the very beginning when Quinn sees Michelle in trouble, he is really bad at the element of surprise when trying to save the girl, you know? I mean, he had the total element of surprise. He could have walked up right behind Sid, cracked him a good one on the back of his head, and gotten away just fine. But instead, he's like, hey, leave her alone. Turn around and look at me, you know? What? You know? I mean, come on, man. I mean, all heroes make mistakes, I guess. But still, I was like, come on. You know, and then Remy has to come to his rescue. I don't know. I had to note that.
Yeah. And, you know, this is an interesting concept, too, because we've talked about how the episodes have started to begin at the end of a previous slide.
That's right.
So here, what they're doing is they're at the end of a previous slide, but they're incorporating what's going on in this world into what's going on in the next world.
Yes, yes, exactly.
So that's pretty cool. And it's some sort of like industrial wasteland gang world.
Yeah, we don't really know, and they never really mention what was going on, you know, in that world at all. Even when they talk about Michelle's history, they don't say too much about what the world was all about.
Yeah, so it's kind of ironic that they go from this world where it's like freedom of gangs to a world that's an entire city prison.
Mm-hmm.
So you can see what they're doing there.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
But they also bring in this idea of people actually seeing the vortex and reacting to it. Not only that, but other people actually follow them through.
No one seemed to be very fazed by the vortex, though.
Yeah, I mean, you know, of course we've got this idea that they're taking Michelle with them.
Right.
Sid sees what they do, so he follows them. And then in the other world, like LJ's sitting there and he's sort of looking at it and he's thinking, wow, I can get out of prison with this thing rather than,
right,
holy shit, there's a fucking vortex right here.
Right, exactly. I know. I was like, everyone's like, oh, look at that. Big shiny hole in the middle of the prison. Well, whatever.
And this gets us into what Arturo explains as what will happen to them the more people they bring along, you know, the more people using the vortex. Because, of course, it was originally set for three people.
Right.
Wade, Quinn, and Arturo.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, now we've got two other people coming through. This means that the whole thing could break down and just spread them across every dimension simultaneously.
Now, the thing that I'm thinking about is, like, he says that it was set for three people, but they didn't really have a setting for three people. If we remember back to the pilot, it just turned up the power, you know? So since we don't really know much about, like, they didn't really know much about sliding at all, they just turned the power up. So theoretically, it was set for three people, but it, you know, just the fact that it came off of its hinges and went outside and grabbed Remy, maybe it was actually set for more. You know, we can't really say.
Yeah, exactly. And they've sort of said, too, that the reason that the timer goes down is to give it time to sort of reset, to sort of, yeah, hit that sweet spot to slide again. So, yeah, I guess the timer could burn out the more stress that you put on it by having more people going through the vortex. But at the same time, it's like, well, you know, maybe we're just going to spend a little bit more time here. But an interesting explanation of what would happen to them if the vortex collapsed.
Yeah, and definitely something that they need to talk about because it keeps happening.
Yes, exactly. But, you know, they do land in this prison. San Francisco is completely a prison. Pretty much it was placed here because of the earthquakes, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. The fault line. They knew it was gonna fall off, you know, of the country soon, so, or at some point, so why not put the prison right there? And then if they die, hey, it's the undesirables. It's the people that, you know, have committed crimes that we just don't really care about. So if that happens, oh, well.
Yeah, but it does make for a pretty cozy prison. I mean, sure, you've got this buddy system thing where if your buddy commits a crime, then you're also punished for it. It's nice.
Yeah, it seems like it'd be a good idea. You know, until you get someone like Sid, who is just dumb. You know, it's like you're not going to stay alive if you commit a crime. You're dead. You're done. You know, it's like, come on, man. I mean, there were some things, and we'll see later on in the messages from time, where people were saying they loved Sid and thought he was a great villain. I thought he was a stupid villain. You know, he was not smart. You know, I mean, he was, I guess he was charismatic enough, you know, to pull a double cross or whatever later on. But still, he's just not very smart.
Yeah, I mean, they go ahead and explain what is going on.
Mm-hmm.
What just happened? You're not on your world. You're in a parallel dimension now.
Mm-hmm.
And he still doesn't seem to grasp the fact that people he knows don't know him because they're not the same person.
Exactly. Because he does that later on in the episode, too. He makes a reference to LJ or something like that.
Yeah.
Lost.
And of course, when he actually does the crime, he sticks up the guy at the ATM. He doesn't seem to grasp that the money's not right.
Right.
He's like, yeah, it's not right. You're in a parallel dimension, man. This is not your world. Jeez. Exactly. Get it into your head.
Yes, yes. Well, speaking of the prison, I got to ask about the guards, because this is something that's always bugged me, right? The guards that are in this prison, they seemingly are fine with dying, because when the earthquake hits, the whole city's going down. They're in this prison. They're in this city prison. How are they going to get out? They don't seem to care. They're fine with this.
It makes you wonder whether or not they are prisoners as well. They've just sort of
I thought about that too.
Yeah, they've been made custodians because of good behavior or something, but not good enough to actually get out of prison.
So, and like, obviously, some of them do, because the one guard, the one custodian, makes a deal with Sid, you know, for the timer, you know, to get out. But most of them, like, I don't know, that was something that was never explained. They've got guards there that are, okay, if we die, we die. I would imagine if they were criminals who became, who were, you know, allowed to become guards or custodians or whatever, I mean, they must have been acting good, you know, good enough for some reason. So I don't know. If I was a guard, I wouldn't want to die with the criminals. You know, I would want to have a way off of there if it happens.
Yeah. Well, you know, what it makes me think of is Escape from L.A.
Okay.
Did you ever
I haven't seen it. I know about it. I just never seen it.
Well, you see, the first one, Escape from New York, mm-hmm. is about how New York is its own prison. It's separated off. And that makes sense because New York is an island. So okay. You can just separate it from the United States. That's fine. By the time you get to the sequel, Escape from L.A., you know, they don't want to do it in New York again. Just derive the same story again.
Right.
So it's going to be in L.A. So what they do is they say, oh, there was this big earthquake and L.A. separated from the coastline and became an island.
Mm.
So now we've set up a prison in L.A. as well.
Right. Gotcha.
So, yeah. So I think they might sort of been playing on that a little bit.
Gotcha. Okay. Well, yeah, that makes a little more sense. Like, it wouldn't be destroyed. It would just sort of like float off.
Exactly. You
know, become its own thing. Okay. Gotcha. All right. No, that makes a little more sense, because then the guards are still going to be the guards. You know, the prison's going to be floating off in the sea instead of part of the country. That makes more sense.
But, you know, we end up getting to the fact that, everybody wants the timer. Because, mm-hmm. you know, LJ saw it work. He knows how it happens. More people find out he's got his buddies. Then the prison guard knows about it because Sid knows about it. And we get to this whole thing about how to get the timer back to the sliders so they can use it
right.
and get out of it. And there's this whole scene of where Arturo betrays them. And I'm not sure I believed it the first time I watched this.
Mm-hmm.
I kind of saw that it was a plan that they were going for. But watching it this time, they have the argument, and it's like you were saying in the trivia, Arturo gets into this whole thing about how, oh, it's survival of the fittest. I'll get home and I'll make sliding my own.
Mm-hmm.
This is actually a future storyline for an episode.
Yeah.
Where they run into an alternate Arturo
mm-hmm.
who pretty much wants to do that, steal the idea.
And, you know, watching it now with a more critical eye, I guess, and like noting, you know, the different sliders and what they do and their reactions, things like that. I'm watching it this time, it's just, I knew it was just a ruse, but like, I believed it more this time watching it. Like, I was like, wow, he really sounds like this is where the storyline was going to go. You know, like, I was like, oh my God, he's evil. He's being bad. So when I first saw it, I was like, oh, come on. No, really? No, it can't be. You know, but this time I was like, oh, well, that could work. You know, that could have worked.
Yeah, but he's not too sly, old Arturo, is he? Because he immediately gets in there. Yes. He looks at the timer and goes, this has been completely reconfigured. I need to take it to Quinn.
Exactly.
And this is where at least Sid says something smart. He goes, it's a ruse. It's a trap. This is a plan. Exactly. And he's just like,
he knows. Yeah.
And they've got no choice but to just knock them out.
Exactly. Now, see, this brings us to Michelle, which I didn't mind so much, but she, I mean, her story is like the one of the typical battered housewife, okay, who makes excuses for her abusive husband's behavior. So it's not her husband, but basically always making excuses like, oh, he doesn't mean to do it. Oh, he loves me. He's this, he's that. Oh, you know, whatever, you know, like that's Michelle's attitude almost through the entire thing. There's a point where she does kiss Quinn and, you know, say, I thank you so much, you know, for that. But like, even after that, I believe she still defends Sid. But then at the very end here, she just sort of makes a complete 180 and decides to leave Sid and shoot him. And just seemed kind of sudden to me. Like I was waiting for like a big moment, like where she understands that, like, wow, Sid is just this awful guy. And maybe I didn't see it. I don't know. Did you see a moment like that happen?
Well, you know, throughout the whole episode, they have Wade sort of saying things to her, constantly telling her that she doesn't have to worry about Sid anymore. She can start afresh. And she spends the whole episode saying no.
Right.
You know, who are you to tell me how to live my life?
Right.
So I guess that was supposed to be the impetus behind it, maybe. But you're right. Yeah. It does sort of just come on suddenly at the end.
Yeah. I was hoping for like a little scene where she realizes on her own, like, wow, this, maybe she's got a point, you know, or, you know, boy, he really is an ass, you know, something like that, that would have shown a progression from a Sid supporter to being like questioning that, you know, that would have been for me a little more natural. I think
it incorporated Wade into the story as well. She didn't do a lot this time around. Even Remy got a really good scene with Arturo with the, you know, the guy calling them fish and everything. And the two of them sort of just stare him down and play their card.
Yeah. For the people who were like down on Remy back in the Messages in Time, the people who were down on Remy, this episode should have given them a little something like, oh, this is what we're doing with this character. You know, cause he really was a stand up guy in this episode. You know, he was strong. He was confident, you know, he wasn't hysterical, nothing like that. He was really a great leading male character in this episode.
Yeah, and the two of us were agreeing with what people were saying back in the day about how he was really just a comic relief character in that first season. He wasn't doing a lot. Why was he there? Now they're really trying to set him up, you know, to be more involved. We kind of had it in the Time Again and World. You know, they sent him off to make a deal with the police, and that was a little lackluster.
Yeah, a little bit. A little bit.
And but, we kind of got down on that episode. Sorry.
Yeah, but, we did.
But yeah, but he is. Little, he's stepping up. You
know? Yeah, little by little, they're putting some, you know, some character stuff in for him, changing him from just the goofy, ridiculous comic relief guy. That's good.
And so by the end, Michelle takes out Sid. The big earthquake's coming. They leave with Michelle. And then it just ends.
And that's it.
No payoff to Michelle. She's just going to run away just as Ryan did.
Exactly.
Gone.
She'll run off and meet Ryan somewhere and they'll live happily forever after, you know?
They can settle down with their dog.
Yeah, exactly. The dog. Henry, the dog. Henry, Michelle.
And Ryan.
And Ryan.
So long.
Yeah. Yes. We barely knew you. Oh, well. It's a theme that's going to keep happening. So there you go.
Now it's time for another episode of Sassy Comebacks with Wade Wells.
How's that?
Well, don't be surprised if no one asks you to the prom.
This has been another episode of Sassy Comebacks with Wade Wells. Getting into our second episode today, the episode is Love Gods, written by Tony Blake and Paul Jackson, directed by John McPherson. No surprise, it's a bunch of men behind this episode. This originally aired March 8th of 1996.
There's not a single man in this whole place. Is it possible that we have landed on a world where there are no men? Wouldn't it be a kick? The only guys on the world filled with love-starved women? Gentlemen, we made a slide to heaven.
I don't think so, guys. They arrested us, remember?
Maybe that was for our own protection. You saw how they were out there.
The Sliders land in a world where a deadly virus was released in the Middle East that killed off the majority of the men in the world. The male Sliders are quickly rounded up, mistakenly believed to be escaped breeders, and taken first to the police precinct for questioning. The police captain comes down hard on Quinn and company for not taking her questions seriously, but they are interrupted by Dr. Morris from the Bureau of Repopulation, who takes the trio back to the breeding camp to be put into service making babies. The group realizes they need to escape as they are due to slide the next day. A fellow guest, David, informs them that he has a plan to leave but needs more manpower, and our boys join him. A planned distraction later that night enables David and the Sliders to escape and reach the comforts of David's home with his wife, Diane. Wade soon joins them, but apparently she was followed by the police. The group hides in a hidden room, escaping out the attic, when the police discover a toilet seat left up, a clue that men have been in the home recently. As they make a run for it, Quinn is tagged by a group of Australian women with a tranquilizer dart. Arturo helps Quinn, sends him running, and tries to make a standoff himself, but is also tranquilized. Quinn stumbles through the woods and eventually comes across a woman driving a car who rescues him. She turns out to be Mrs. Hills, a well-known seller of baked goods. She says she can help Quinn find his friends, but asks that he give her a child, being that her husband had died from the virus before they could ever conceive their own. Wade comes up with a plan to rescue Arturo, which involves Remy defecting to Australia. They go to the Australian consulate, and while the plan is derailed, three of our Sliders are reunited. Wade tries another deal, saying that she can give them Trevor Grant, a well-known and top grade A breeder, for her two friends and the release of Diane. The BRP is hesitant, but Wade convinces them that their security has been breached and Trevor Grant is going to be rendered useless as a breeder soon. She also makes the case that three men would diversify their gene pool. The trade is agreed to. At the meeting point, the trade is made, but the police chief receives a call that the transport van is delayed. As Arturo, Remy, David, and Diane board a van sitting nearby, it is revealed that Wade is the one driving the van, having sabotaged the official transport vehicle. They speed off, seeing Quinn at their designated meeting spot, and drive the van and all within it through the vortex to the next world. We're left with a smiling Mrs. Hills gazing fondly at a picture of Quinn.
Friends are in trouble. I gotta go.
Listen, even if you were physically able, it's not a good idea. It was posted in the lobby this morning. But the good news is your friends haven't been recaptured. Listen to me. I can help you.
I can't ask you to do that. I feel I'd be taking advantage of you.
I'm a big girl. If I want to be taken advantage of, that's my business.
But I can't pay you back.
Well, actually, you can.
All right, so we have the tiniest bit of trivia for this episode.
And it's just basically one scene from the very beginning. The opening scene was Remy sliding into this world with knee pads and a bike helmet, which they do use in a later episode. It was originally going to be used in this one, but they just cut it for timing.
Ah, there you go. I do remember the opening to an upcoming episode. Yeah, Remy's, I think he calls them sliding pads or something.
Right.
Trademarked sliding pads.
Exactly.
For the serious slider. Very interesting that it should have been used here, but at least we're going to get it soon.
Good morning, Mr. Arturo. Sleep well?
It's Professor Arturo, and no, I did not sleep well. Do you imagine you can snatch a man off the streets without there being consequences?
Oh, quit your bitching, mate, and save your strength. I've got a lot of lassies waiting for you.
I beg your pardon?
Well, you know Trevor Grant, but you'll do. The baby gap, you know. And eat your Vegemite. You'll need to maximize your sperm count where you're going.
And where would that be?
Canberra. We've got a right nice breeding facility there. Good day. Professor.
Good Lord.
All right, so getting into our discussion of this episode, what an idea. A world with very few men. It's not some cliched things that you may have seen of this idea, right, where it's like a world of no men, the last man on earth kind of thing. It's just the male population has been cut down to probably about 10% of what it used to be.
Right.
And Arturo and Remy are totally into it at the get-go, ready, willing, and able. But
oh, they're giddy. They're ready. This is our time, man.
But Quinn's a little bit skeptical, but still into it.
Yeah, I mean, the three of them were so, like, they were just like little schoolboys, you know, and you see them in the police precinct with the captain. They were just like, you know, smiling. Like, they could not stop, you know, like they were just loving this. It was good. It was a good scene. I liked it. It was funny.
Yeah. So pretty much what happened was they were at war with Iraq, and they unleashed this plague that killed men. It attacked the male chromosome. So it took out the men. But of course, you know, with any plague or disease, you're not going to wipe out everybody. There's going to be about that 10% margin that are immune.
Mm-hmm.
And Australia wasn't hit too hard because they're a bit further south.
Right.
And they are now considered to be a global superpower, which is the second time that they've gone into Australia in some kind of war. If you remember back the hippie world, there was the whole thing about Australia being invaded and then liberated, and then Russia was in control and stuff like that. So yeah, this idea of incorporating Australia into the show, it feels good for me because I'm from Australia, you know, that cultural reference to a show that I enjoy.
Well, you know, in, to go off track a little bit, in Lost, the TV show, Australia was a big player there as well. I don't know if you watched that show, but that was a big part of the storyline as well. Something about Australia. What is it with you guys?
We just hang back down here.
Alrighty. Well, so yeah, I thought it was a neat idea that, you know, that Australia was like the top power now, you know, one of the top powers in the world.
And that leads us to the BIP, or the Bureau of Repopulation, because it's now a race to repopulate the world. All these countries have been devastated, so they need to repopulate. So men are kept in breeding centers, and Wade can't get a hotel room because there's the breeding convention on. So the places, and I actually, I can't help but laugh at this. You know, they call it the breeding convention, but ostensibly it's women coming to town to get some action.
Exactly. That's true. This is true. Yeah.
So it cracks me up. Yeah. At the same time, I do have to, you know, once the Australians come into it, they are obviously not Australian.
Yeah.
These are terrible actors. Doing terrible accents that kind of sound Irish.
Yeah, they did. Like, I'm not exactly a accent aficionado. I do some accents here and there and, you know, play around, but they're mostly stereotypical accents. But I could hear it in there. I was like, that doesn't sound like, you know, doesn't sound like Corey, you know. Yeah.
I mean, they were trying their best, you know, but it really, to me, it came off a bit Irish. You know, yeah, so try your Vegemite. It'll make you feel good.
Speaking of Vegemite, well, because I don't know, I've never had Vegemite. I don't know much about it at all. I've heard about it, like in various TV shows and stuff, joked about. Mm. Will Vegemite help with your sperm count?
I don't know.
That's what she says. I'm like, really? Vegemite? Yeah. All right. Well, okay.
What it is, it's a vegetable yeast extract.
That sounds great.
It's very salty. There's actually a great video. It was Hugh Jackman. It was maybe 2 months ago.
Mm-hmm.
And he demonstrates how to put Vegemite on toast.
Okay.
So he demonstrates, like, you know, the perfect quantity. You only need, like, the littlest bit to spread across, just a thin layer on your toast.
I'm going to have to look this up.
So that was, you know, really, really funny. And I immediately posted on my Facebook. I'm like, all right, American friends, this is how it's done.
All right. There you go. Well, look that up, people. You'll learn a little bit about Vegemite there, how to use it. Proper use of Vegemite. Not just for sperm counts. All right.
But yeah, it, the accents annoyed me. They were just, they were terrible.
All right. Well, anyway, following up on the previous episode where I said Quinn was bad at sneaking up on people, in this one, they're in the sauna and David says, all right, keep your backs to the camera. And immediately Quinn turns around and looks right at the camera. It's like he just said, don't look at the camera, and he has to look at the camera. I'm like, man, you would never make it as Batman. I'm telling you right now.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, I was just like, oh, come on. He just said. And then, of course, the other funny part that I really enjoyed was the Grow Your Own Chia Man. That was a funny little, you know, little segment. I guess it's supposed to be like QVC on there or whatever. And that was very funny when they said, many women are concerned about size. And I was like, oh, my God, what, is that what they're talking about? Like, oh, no, the size of how tall or short he is. Okay. I get you now.
You know, I really don't understand what the purpose of a chia man would be, like outside of the purpose of just a regular chia pet.
Exactly. Exactly.
Like, are they supposed to like grow it to be like an actual man size and then like have sex with it or something?
I hope not. Oh my God.
I was like, well, what? Now they're it's ostensibly a pantyhose filled with dirt that grass grows on. Like,
right, right. See, I hadn't, my mind hadn't even gone down that road, but your mind, man, I like it. I like it.
I don't know what they were getting at with that commercial. So weird.
You know, I mean, don't get a blow up doll. Let's grow your own chia, man. It's organic. See, there you go. It's natural. Yeah.
Bizarre.
Yes, a little bit.
I actually love the part where Quinn is saved by that woman. You know, he's been hit with a tranquilizer dart and he's running away, and straight away that woman sees him and she's like, hey, get in my car.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly.
You see what was going through her mind immediately.
Oh yeah, definitely. Oh, it's a man. Gotta get me some of that.
But she takes him to like a really nice place too.
Oh yeah,
like right on the waterfall and stuff. What a beautiful place.
Beautiful. Yeah, that would have been a great place to have woken up in, and all the woman wants to do is, you know, all right, that's good. But you know, I like this little side story that they had here. It was just enough, I think. They didn't spend a lot of time with it, but just a little bit, because it's a moral decision that Quinn has to struggle with here. You know, fathering a child he'll never see. The other thing is, it's also, if you go a little bit deeper, an emotional struggle as well, not just a moral struggle, but because we believe that the idea was for him and Wade to sort of be together, which they keep showing, you know, here and there. So is this something that he can do? Like, would he feel bad about Wade then?
It's, I think, probably one of the more stronger parts of the episode, to tell you the truth.
Oh, yeah, I really think.
And it's not only the age difference, too. You know, he's really getting in on some MILF action there.
Yes, he is.
And that's set up at the beginning when she says, oh, you don't recognize me, do you? Because I guess she'd seen his alternate at some point.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It could, yeah. Definitely.
And his response is, of course I recognize you. My mom used to buy your cookies all the time. You know, he's very childlike.
Right. Yes.
So you're getting that age difference straight away. But yeah, she brings up this idea that she's lost her husband and, you know, she's kind of resigned herself to never having a man in her life again, but he can do this for her now. She can, you know, she's too old to have a child, presumably. There's all these restrictions on people who can have children, and he can help her out in that department. And it's sort of left ambiguous about whether or not he did, but I'm going to go with yeah, he did.
Yeah. Yeah, I would say he did too. I mean, why else would she have a picture of him at the end? You know?
Yeah.
You know, it was a picture of him just taken probably like right there, you know, with a little you know, Polaroid camera or whatever. And you know, like if he didn't do it, she wouldn't have kept the picture. You know, the picture was basically to, you know, say, yeah, this is what your dad was, you know, this is what he looked like. He had to go a long time ago. Or maybe she would just say he was taken by the plague before you were born. Something like that. I don't know.
This is the thing that sort of throws me off a little bit, which I thought was just a little off about the episode. Was when they first arrive, there's all ladies' clothing stores, all the toy stores are filled with girls' toys and things like that. They are repopulating. Where are all the little boys? Where are the children who are boys?
And see, I hadn't thought about that, but this comes up later on in the Messages and Times. They had brought this up as well. Like, what happens? Where are the boys?
Right.
What are they doing?
Going to see where that goes.
Yeah. Like they said, well, you know, like if a boy is born to a woman, is, you know, is he left in the care of, you know, the family, the mother, until he's of age and can start breeding? Or is he taken away right away, be raised by the government for just breeding purposes? Which that takes it to a whole nother level. If they take your child away and just raise him specifically for breeding purposes.
Yeah. Or are they, in almost a Jurassic Park kind of way, deliberately only breeding females or something like that? But that wouldn't be conducive to this whole repopulation thing.
I just think if they had taken it to the level where the government, you know, would take them away just to be, you know, raised for the purposes of breeding, that would take this into a really dark, like a dark place, I think.
Yeah. And you know, well, I guess they would have to be protective of male offspring, because we've seen that the Australians are trying to kidnap of age breeders, as they call them, would they go to the extent of stealing male offspring, kidnapping male offspring, because they're going to grow up and they're going to be breeders? So
exactly,
you could think that maybe they are keeping the boys in some sort of secure location for their own protection.
Of course. Let me ask you this, because I did you think that Mrs. Hills, you think she saw Quinn's double before?
I think so. Yeah, when she was talking to him, I think she sort of conveyed that she recognized him from, I guess, when he was a kid.
See, I was thinking, when she said, "You don't recognize me, do you?" I just thought that she meant that her picture is like on her baked goods, on her cookies and things.
Right.
That's what I was thinking, because I bring it up because some people, and I didn't include this in Message in Time because I was like, yeah, that's all right. We don't need that. It's, you know, only a couple of people were talking about it, but some people were saying, what if Mrs. Hill's deceased husband was actually Quinn from that world, his double? That was a theory that they were putting out back then, saying maybe that was, maybe Quinn was actually married to Mrs. Hills, and that's why she said, you know, "You don't recognize me, do you?" To me, I think that's a little bit too far out there.
Yeah, it's a bit of a stretch.
That's why I brought it up, because you said you felt that she had seen him before, so I sort of played into that a little bit.
Yeah, or I could go along with the lines of, you know, maybe she just feels she had a bit of notoriety.
Right.
You know, her fame, her, you know, nationwide fame for her cookies.
Yeah, because I know, like, I mean, you know, obviously we don't have Mrs. Hill's cookies, but we have Mrs. Fields' cookies. And I don't know what Mrs. Fields looks like. You know, I don't even know if her picture's on the packages or not, but I just know the name Mrs. Fields. You know, maybe, you know, I was thinking maybe her picture was on Mrs. Hill's cookies or whatever.
Right.
So, yeah, there was a line that David had said about how the Australians, you know, kidnapping breeders and stuff like that, they had tried to also break into the BRP with, I think they said, 250 tons of saltpeter. And I was like, what the hell is saltpeter? You know, like, I had no idea. You know, I was like, so, you know, went on to the Google and did some research. And saltpeter apparently is potassium nitrate. And it's not an aphrodisiac. It's an anaphrodisiac. And it's the opposite of aphrodisiac, because it causes impotence and suppresses sexual urges. So the line where he says they broke in with, you know, saltpeter, the Australians were trying to poison the breeders there so they wouldn't be able to perform, because in this world, that's how they're repopulating, through sex, not through other methods, but through sex. They actually have to have sex with many, 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 many women. Yeah. In order to repopulate. So, you know, that was what the saltpeter line was about. I'm not sure how many people knew what saltpeter was, but I was like, well, that's interesting. I want to find out, you know, why, what's so great about saltpeter? What is that thing? So there you go. It's an anaphrodisiac.
And of course, later, Wade brings up that, you know, she's trying to make the exchange for Trevor Grant.
Mm-hmm.
And she says that an Australian spy has been approved to breed with Trevor Grant, and she's going to infect him with the mumps virus, which will make him sterile.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, there's all these like tricky ways that they've come up with to stop other countries from repopulating.
And then I was wondering, because when I was looking up the saltpeter stuff, I was like, well, let me find out a little bit about alternate methods of getting pregnant. And the in vitro fertilization method was started back in the late 70s, 77, 78. And this plague that happened in this episode, I don't think it happened back then, before then. Like, I was thinking maybe it happened within the last, I don't know, 10 years maybe. You know, like, maybe it happened in like 85. The show was like 95, 96. And maybe the plague happened in 10 years earlier. So I'm wondering, like, I like the alt history that they do. You know, and it's just missing here. Like, why wasn't in vitro fertilization discovered? You know, like in the fever, when we watched that, they said, well, you know, it was just the penicillin was just never discovered. The accident that happened in our world just never happened. And they didn't explain that in this episode, which would have been nice to have seen. I like that alt history stuff.
If they could do in vitro fertilization, it would have been a bit more, I guess, like, rather than bringing the women to the men and then they'd have to go through the whole act of sex, which can sometimes take a while.
Yeah, exactly.
They even say to Quinn, like, we'll start you off at 5 times a day for the first week. And, you know, things like that's a lot of sex to get through in a week.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah, why not just have them donate sperm? Like, get in there five times a day and just donate some sperm.
I know, exactly. I mean, five times a day, that's, you know, that's possible. I'm just saying.
Yeah.
A little, you know.
you could get that done a little bit quicker than
exactly,
you know, what
exactly.
foreplay takes.
Exactly. But, you know, some of us are up to the job. It's all right. It's okay. It's all good. It's all good. Anyway, okay. Now, the last thing that we were going to talk about was, you know, again, this was from last episode as well, taking extra people into the vortex, the limits. And this time, we take some extra people, but we also take a whole friggin' van with us. Which, I mean, you know, we took a Cadillac before, so maybe it's okay. It's a van, Cadillac, you know, it's okay. But I don't know. It's we take them into the van, where we take them into the vortex with us, the van and the two people. And once again, no payoff for them either.
This could have been a bit easier to lose in the jumble of the episodes, you know. Mm-hmm. But putting them back in order, just last episode, Arturo was telling us about the dangers of exceeding the vortex limits.
Yes.
And all they did was bring two extra people. This time, they've brought two extra people and a van. That's dangerous. And Arturo was totally for it.
Yeah. He was like, yes.
Yes. You know? Wade opens the vortex and he's like, yeah, let's how we do it. Just drive the van straight in.
Exactly. Pedal to the metal, Wade. Let's go.
Yeah.
Pedal to the metal, Miss Wells.
So it is, yeah, that is a little off-putting that just straight away they would break the rules that they're trying to set up here.
Right.
But still, overall, I thought it was a very well-done episode.
Yeah, I like this one. El Cid was okay for me. It was, I don't know, it was like so-so. But I enjoyed this one a lot.
You got 30 seconds.
You want the Patriots back? Change the attitude.
You said something on the phone about the Australians.
The Australians are prepared to broker a deal. Three of the missing Patriots for Trevor Grant, in addition to the release of Diane Eiseley.
No, out of the question.
Well, what if I told you Trevor Grant was about to go on the disabled list?
What are you talking about?
The security of the BRP has been breached. An Australian double agent is on the list of approved recipients, and she's going to inject your Superman with a mumps virus. He'll be sterile.
Even if that were true, we'll stop them.
How? The only sure way is to stop all women from seeing him, and that sort of defeats the purpose, doesn't it? Trevor Grant is worth 1,200 pregnancies tops. The escapees are worth at least that, plus which you'll be varying your gene pool.
All right, so getting into messages in time.
So we'll start off with Love God, since we just ended that discussion. So they go into a steam bath, which apparently is not good if you're trying to, you know, have a good sperm count, because someone said on the boards, sperm counts are actually lowered when you take a steam bath. So, you know, that was overlooked by the writers, which again may have been written by males who have no idea about sperm counts and whatnot. This was a lot of people are saying this was a much better episode than the movie ripoffs that have been showing up. Okay, now if you remember, it was shown out of order, so we had Into the Mystic, which was the Wizard of Oz kind of tribute. El Cid we had, which was, you know, like you said, an Escape from New York kind of tribute. I'm saying tribute, you know, trying to be nice. You know, they also, at this point, they had also had Jillian of the Spirits shown, which was a, you know, the movie Ghost. It was kind of a tribute to that as well. So they're saying this was much more original. You know, it didn't seem like it was playing to like popular movies at the time. So they were pretty happy with it. They said Wade was good in this commanding role, though we don't see her too much. She does have her moments are really good that she does have in there. So yeah. And one more from the El Cid Escape from New York. They said the guard from El Cid with the cane was a kind of a ripoff of Cool Hand Luke, which I've not seen. But apparently that's something referenced in Cool Hand Luke as well. So people were just a little tired of the movie ripoffs, which is too bad because it's going to get a little worse as we go on. There's going to be more. People were talking about, like we said earlier, the whole moral conflict that Quinn had and the emotional conflict because of Wade. There was a little discussion on that. The genuine concern from Arturo after Quinn gets shot flew in the face of a lot of people on the boards were thinking that Arturo was jealous and really going to try to steal sliding. You know, like they were thinking that Arturo was not really a nice guy. But then this genuine concern here that Arturo had, you know, like, go on, I'll you know, I'm staying here. I'll take care of it. You know, it was like flew in their face. Like I said, just said, oh, well, maybe he is a nice guy. You know, he doesn't have that darker side that they were thinking.
Yeah, more fatherly.
Yeah, a lot more fatherly. There is a book that someone had talked about, which if you like this episode, if you like the idea of a what if, you know, women, you know, had, you know, were the only people on Earth and men weren't. There's a book by Neville Shute called On the Beach, and that's about a plague that wipes out men. Someone had said, hey, you know, there's this borrows from this book. So check out On the Beach by Neville Shute if you're interested in more of that story or another take on that story, I should say.
Cool.
And here, like we said earlier, what happens with the male children? You know, are they taken by the government or, you know, as breeders, raised as breeders, or are they taken when they're of age? People are wondering about that. And, you know, everyone has their theories. And, oh, this was your comment earlier about asking, where are all the boys? Where are all the men? You know, if the goal is repopulation, you can't just have women. You can't just have women. You need to have men as well to rebuild the population. And someone was saying that the idea is to repopulate with the strongest for the strong ideal population. But Arturo says brain cells should be more of their focus. An intelligent society, better, it's much better than a good-looking one.
You know, yeah, he has a go at Trevor Grant about.
Exactly, yeah, because they're using all, like, you know, the best-looking men, best-looking women to repopulate. But, you know, what about the intelligent side of that? You know, what about, you know, that's what you really need. Someone had mentioned that Isaac Asimov actually has articles on population control, and the goal is to have a large population living at a particular level to produce a strong country. He said too many people and too low a standard of living equals a weaker country. It's a very delicate balance. So, right. You know, this goes into the whole idea of population control as well. You know, going back to the idea of the lottery, you right. know, population control there, this is sort of in the same vein as well. There was also a long conversation about Quinn's sperm count and Mrs. Hill's ovulation periods. And, like, they went on in this thread about, well, if it's 5 days before the, you know, the ovulation period and the egg drops, da, 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 and then Quinn's sperm count, this would have to match up. So I was like, holy cow. I'm like, all right, this is too much. I read it for way too long. I should have stopped way earlier, but I was like, well, I got to see where this goes. So, yeah, there's a very long, if you're interested in that, check it out.
I had a laugh at this as well, was just the careful camera movement during the scene where they are examining Quinn, because his pants are down around his ankles and he's lying there, you know. So I'm thinking, man, they must have, like, really worked on that camera movement, because he sort of gets off the table and then when he comes back around, his pants are back up, you know. So we had to do that pretty quickly.
Exactly.
Can't just have it hanging on primetime TV.
Mm-hmm. There was also there was a note about the episode Invasion that was coming up. That was, I guess, it was supposed to be aired, you know, on a certain date, but they moved it. Fox moved it because they wanted it to coincide with the release of the movie Independence Day, because it's all about aliens. So again, you know, trying to cash in on the you know, what's going on in the popular media.
Right.
Trying to get some more viewers that way. All right, so let's see, that's for Love Gods. I told you there's a lot of messages in time now that we're getting, now that we're in the second season. People are really talking about the show a lot more than they were in the first season. So for El Cid, people were wondering, why was Arturo worried about bringing Michelle and Cid? Because, quote, last episode, they brought in a whole van. Well, people did not realize the order was messed up. So they're like, how come they're worried about Michelle and Cid? They just brought a van last episode. Everything was fine. You know? So that, again, not knowing that the production order was changed. There were some complaints about the language used in this episode, which I didn't even really notice. You know, maybe I'm just desensitized to it in this day and age. But people were saying, boy, there were some curses in this episode, you know. And other people were like, well, you know, it was about criminals, and criminals don't go along saying, gee whiz, mister, you know. So it fits. You know, it fits the episode.
I can't say I really noticed any.
Yeah, I didn't notice either, but yeah, people noticed it. So it may have been like hell and maybe damn or something like that. I don't know. It's like, okay, well, hey, you know.
Harsh for prime time in 1996.
Right. Someone was glad that Michelle did realize her guy was an abuser and made a change. You know, it's an important thing to show on TV, because it's, you know, all too common a story where a woman stays with a man, you know, and makes the excuses. So it was an important thing to be said in the episode that, look at, you know, she makes a decision that she realizes he's not a good guy. I got to get out of here. So it was a good thing that the you know, that they had put that in there. People were getting tired of the unresolved endings, especially when they have the extra sliders sliding with them and you never hear from them again. People don't like that. Well, we don't like that, you know? It's like, give us some closure. There were some wonderings about Arturo's bad attitude lately. In this episode, in El Cid, he berates Quinn for his involvement. Again, not as bad as he could have, you know, in those deleted scenes. But in the last episode that they had seen, Jillian of the Spirits, he's throwing a fit trying to fix the timer. You know, he just has a bad attitude. You know, going back to the time and again world, I think. In that one, you know, he's very down on sliding. He's tired, you know. So they're saying, they're wondering, which is kind of cool that they were wondering this back then. Are they building to a story about where they meet an evil Arturo Double who's going to try to kill Quinn? I'm like, oh, you guys are good. You know, I'm like, look at that. You guys pretty much nailed it, you know? I thought that was cool. That was really, really cool. And so then, and going along with that, there was this bit that someone had quoted, and there wasn't a source for it, so I'm not sure how truthful it is, but they had said, someone had said that Tracy Torme said Arturo was not supposed to be just a mentor. He was not supposed to be just a good guy, you know, that a fatherly type. He was supposed to have a dark side. So, you know, a lot of the stuff they have in there sort of fits that, you know, with Arturo being a little bit, you know, negative lately. So I thought that was kind of neat. And then the last thing, which I thought, I'm a bit confused. One person on the boards was apparently a time traveler because he posted a question. He said, what happened to Michelle? Didn't Quinn call his double on the phone and hook his double and Michelle up? And he recalls that happening. Like he says, I remember this happening. Okay. He posted that question on July 2nd. All right. The episode that he's talking about was not Michelle. It was the episode with Daylan where the time moves backwards. Yeah. He's talking about an episode with Daylan that aired on July 12th. But he posted the original question on July 2nd, 1996. And the episode didn't air until July 12th. 1996. I'm like, wait a second here. How does that work? So it confused me. I had to mention that because I'm like, what the heck?
Well, you know, maybe he backdated it somehow.
Maybe he did.
Maybe he was an industry person and he got a screener copy or something. I don't know.
That could be. I was like, wait a second. Something doesn't make sense here. Yeah, you know.
Weird.
Anyway. Yeah. So there you go. Messages in Time.
So yeah, awesome discussion. Two really good, strong episodes, I think.
Yep, definitely.
Okay, so next week, of course, we will be discussing two more episodes of Sliders. Those episodes are The Good, The Bad, and The Wealthy, and As Time Goes By. So, yeah, looking forward to that. I think the first one, if I remember, was kind of like a modern Western.
Yeah, if memory serves, both of these episodes are two of the ones that I really enjoyed. All right, well, that is it for this episode of the Rewatch Podcast. You can keep up with listener interaction by liking our Facebook page at facebook.com/rewatchpodcast and follow the show on Twitter at rewatchpod. And also, you can visit our real honest-to-goodness actual webpage, if you use web pages these days, at rewatchpodcast.podomatic.com. And we have some of our favorite sites linked on there, such as Dimensions of Continuity. That's where we get the deleted scenes from. Our friends over at Sliders Slideside. And then, of course, we have a very active forum over at sliders.tv. If you are looking to get in some Sliders discussion and there's no one around you who's really into it, head over to sliders.tv. A great community there. Very active, posting, you know, throughout the week and whatnot. So check it out.
Yeah, love having those guys over there giving us feedback. Feel free to use it if you want to send us your thoughts on the episodes we're talking about rather than sending us an email. That's fine. But you know, you can always write us an email or record a voice message and send it to therewatchpodcast@gmail.com. also, if you've enjoyed the episode, please consider giving us a rate and review on iTunes, because that really helps with search results, builds up the listenership, and of course that awesome listener interaction that we love. All right, so time to get out of here. So I'll just say, until next time, you better be looking out for them wallabies.
We gotta slide.
The Rewatch Podcast is not associated with NBC Universal, St. Clair Entertainment, Fox, or Sci-Fi Channel. The use of any and all copyrighted material is only for parody, news analysis, critique, or educational purposes, as provided in United States Code Title 17, aka Fair Use. Music, provided by Kevin MacLeod at incompetech.com. Copyright 2015, The Rewatch Podcast.